The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange generates high-quality leads at scale, helping you find your next ideal customer. Episode 4, recorded live at Advertising Week New York, features Marilyn Mead Brutoco, CMO of Winmo, in conversation with Justin Cook, chairman of Demand Exchange.
Good afternoon, Marilyn Mead Brutoco from Winmo. Thank you so much for joining us here at Advertising Week New York.
My absolute pleasure.
First of all, just give us a bit of a snapshot on you, career to date, and what you're up to at Winmo.
Sure. So I've been at Winmo actually for, I think it's almost 8 years now, which is almost like unheard of in the space that we work in. But they're a really cool company doing great things in sales intelligence and tracking the advertising ecosystem. So essentially what we do is we work with a lot of companies that are here today, Ampersand, Hulu, Netflix, TikTok, agencies like Dentsu, Havas, use Winmo to identify opportunities with advertisers who are spending and who will be spending, and to decipher who the contacts are that are responsible for spending those budgets. So I've been there for about 7 years. Prior to that, I was at another sales intelligence company called Advertising Database, doing something very similar. And prior to that, I was at Pepsi. So started out completely different track and then changed gears a little bit.
And what, over that career and in the role, are your fundamental concepts and approaches to marketing?
Ruthlessly simplify the complex is, if I have had to like boil it down, it would be ruthlessly simplify the complex, especially in publishing, ad tech, technology. You know, we're a B2B SaaS company. I think there are companies that can kind of, it's easy to get in your own way and make it really complicated and when you're talking about your product or what you do. So that would be my number one tenet.
I love it. And tell me about how you apply that in practice.
So there's a number of ways you can apply that. But one of the ways, I started out at Winmo as a product marketer. So essentially, I would work with the product team. They would explain to me, here are a set of features, and they were always really complicated technical features. And my job was to explain why those things existed and what the benefits were. So we would have a release where it was like, oh, we now have sports sponsorship intelligence that links brands to the sports teams that they partner with and in-venue activations, and we have an API and blah, blah, blah. And simplifying that to sell more sponsorships. You know, we have an integration that'll help you sell more sponsorships. So ruthlessly simplifying the complex, making it so that you hook someone through marketing rather than, it's kind of like providing the Cliff's Notes, and then they can get on a call with sales to understand the full novel.
And when did you discover that superpower? Because it really is a superpower. It's you know, you often get, when you do what you just did, everyone in the room just going, wow, that's amazing. How did you do that?
I've never actually thought about it before, but just when you asked that question, I started out as a writer and a copy editor. And I think a lot in copy editing and writing, a lot of what it is like sculpture, where you're starting out with a big block and then you're just paring down and paring down and paring down and making it, taking away. And I think that good marketing, good product positioning and company positioning is a lot of that, is just simplifying, paring down. As a copy editor, a lot of what I had to do was pare down, and sometimes the authors you work with get mad at you, but you know, sometimes you have to kill your darlings. That's an expression in writing.
Yep.
Sometimes you have to remove things that seem important to you, but to the reader or the viewer or the potential buyer, doesn't do anything for them. It doesn't cause a light bulb moment. So you just have to, you have very little time. People have such short attention spans. You have to figure out the things that make the light bulb go off for them.
And I love that light bulb going off, and killing your darlings is also a favorite kind of expression of mine too. Let's talk about the customer journey for a second, and how you think about that in particularly B2B when you're mm-hmm. when you're going out to market. How do you ensure that you're effectively really understanding and effectively managing that kind of customer journey?
So in B2B, it's interesting. So you and I had a panel yesterday.
We talked
quite a bit
again.
About this. Thank you. It was a great one. We talked a little bit about this, but it's interesting because in B2B, unlike B2C, you're talking to kind of a committee of people who come to a consensus to buy something. Usually in enterprise, at least, it's a committee of people. It's no one person. So I think it starts with, number one, figuring out your own product positioning, why you exist, what your purpose is, what problem you solve, and then identifying what problems you solve for specific buyer personas. So for us, the end user is typically, let's say, a media seller. They just want to fill their pipeline with more leads. So to them, we market as like increase lead volume, understand when advertisers are coming into market. But then for a CRO or someone in finance, it's different messaging. So it's refining the messaging by audience and going to market with messaging specific to those buyer personas.
And obviously, we all need inputs to that. Wealth of data out there. How do you think about applying that input, that data, and turning that into insight that helps you get that right?
There's so much data. Mm-hmm. There's, I think some of it is traditional market research and just understanding what is the market size. You know, Winmo aside, if I'm thinking just as a marketer, there's so many times where I feel like the entrepreneurial side of me thinks I come up with a great solution, and then upon reviewing the market research realizes, well, great, that's a niche market size of 20,000 people who could buy this product. So we'd be in the red the entire time. So I think identifying market size is a big one. I do think that, and this is old school, but I do think that surveys and beta testing is really important. Asking people directly what they're looking for and what the light bulb moments are for them. But I also don't 100% believe surveys. I've lied on surveys, or not lied, but sometimes you just want to get a question over with and move on with your life. So layering in with that, things like Google Analytics yeah. to understand how traffic is getting to our site, or within our product, what are people searching for? So hard data mixed with direct customer and prospect feedback and market research.
And so bringing together those different sort of members of the buying committee and using all of that great insight, how do you then map that to channels?
It's interesting. So a lot of our more direct response, I'd say, channels, things like PPC. Mm-hmm. Those buyer journeys, that typically tends to be the end user. So a lot of most of our channels, email, advertising, PPC, tends to be marketing to the end user, the media seller or the new business professional. And then where the higher level buying decision makers, the CRO, CFO, president of an agency, founder of an agency, that for us is content creation. Because a lot of times the end user will sort of discover the product, bring it to the higher ups in their company, and it's not their job to sell it into their boss. It's our job to give them content that they can use to convince from a financial perspective why a company should invest in a tool like Winmo.
And thinking about the market right now and the wealth of new technologies and solutions out there and how things are evolving, what are you noticing B2B particularly, how is that changing? How is B2B marketing changing?
I think it's changed so much since the pandemic mm-hmm. in too many ways to even get into right now.
It's a whole other podcast.
It's a whole other podcast. But one, I think that people are somewhat less responsive in ways. You know, they'll fill out a form and then, you know, indicating interest, and then you can't get in touch. There's a lot of things that have changed. But I think what it boils down to is that people at a certain point want to interact with sales, but I think that that point is closer and closer to the actual purchase than it used to be. I think years ago, people would say, I'm curious about this product. I'm going to call them up and talk to a salesperson. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think that people want to learn about the product through, you know, reviews, for example, customer reviews on things like G2 Crowd or Trust Radius or whatever. They want to know what their peers think about the product, not what a salesperson is saying about it necessarily. So people are doing research in that way. We also, to kind of satisfy that I'm curious but I'm not ready to have a conversation, we put out like an interactive demo of our site so that people can go get a real sense, not of a stylized, polished product video, but like a click-through tour on our site so that people can engage with the product and then say, I'm ready to have a conversation with sales. And it's sort of a, I think that there's a lot, there are more touch points in the journey than there used to be prior to engaging with someone directly.
That's a really brilliant answer. And it's made me think about a couple of things. The first is, what's the line between marketing and sales?
And so thin.
It is so thin, right? And it seems to be getting thinner. And I think generally in B2B, that's a good thing because the two were so far apart. But also, how are you now using metrics to kind of really help you measure your success?
So we're held accountable, and my team is held accountable to revenue numbers specifically. I think that that's, you know, we can talk about web traffic and social media likes and whatever, but so we start with revenue and measuring that, and then aside from that, pipeline generated, how many times did we get our sales team at bat, opportunities created, that would be sort of pipeline, and then leads and MQLs are sort of what we measure, and we measure all of that by channel to understand what's working, what isn't, because it's constantly changing. Like I was talking about PPC earlier.
Yep.
We launched new PPC campaigns. They were crushing it for 6 months, but you can't like set it and forget it because then suddenly they're not producing and you have to go in and change things around. So I think tracking it back to revenue is the best way for me to understand, is this really working? Because there are things that can also net you a bunch of leads, but they're not, you know, if there's no revenue generated from it, it's not necessarily something that's working, and you can get lost in thinking that it's effective when it's not. The other thing that I would add is, because you said, what's the line between marketing and sales? I think marketing has that sort of direct response performance aspect of it is very close to sales. But I also think it's the job of marketing to create a brand that evokes positive emotion and some things that are less quantifiable, and, you know, doing things like being at Advertising Week and establishing ourselves as an expert in the space and taking advantage of thought, asserting our point of view and thought leadership. So those things aren't necessarily as close to sales and not measurable through revenue. But I think that it's the mix of that plus the things that we can measure very directly that create success.
I love that kind of qual component, which is almost a hard metric in itself, I think. You're certainly an authority in this conversation. So you talked about the fact that you're innovating all the time. And I just wondered how you almost set up a kind of culture of experimentation, because we can't stand still. So how do you instill that in your teams?
So one is not only allowing, but expecting for a certain percentage of marketing spend to be an experiment every quarter.
Can you reveal a percentage that you kind of live by?
So mine is lower than a lot of people's. Okay, I would say something closer to 10% for me, but I've heard a lot of people say as much as 30% of their budget is experimental. Mine would be closer to 10% just because, you know, if we have to, it's like a tighter margin, you know, margin for error for us, and we don't have millions of dollars to throw away and just hope it works. So it's really 10%, but doing things that are experiments to see if they take off and expecting nothing from them, not building any results into what we anticipate, what our, you know, projected pipeline or forecast or would be, not expecting those experiments to produce at all, not factoring in any results because they're not a known quantity. And then from there, we double down on what works. And, you know, a lot of times things don't work, but giving a team the flexibility and the expectation that they need to be experimenting.
And lastly, I think that is a nice lead into really what's around the corner. What's kind of on your kind of next list?
So I think that there, from a SaaS perspective, I think I'm really excited by the opportunities in product-led growth, where people sort of enter a trial environment, and rather than having a traditional demo and being guided by a person, they're guided by tutorials and in-product messaging, and then can sort of self-provision when they decide to purchase. I'm really excited by that. I think we'll see more of that in the future. I don't think sales is going anywhere, but I think it frees up a sales organization to pursue enterprise accounts that are more complicated, that need a human touch point, and then allows everything else to be sort of self-serve. So that's an area that I'm really excited about.
Marilyn, thank you so much for joining us here today. Really appreciate it. Great conversation.
The Business of Marketing podcast was brought to you by Demand Exchange, helping you find your next ideal customer.